Welcome to Expanding Your Faith, a podcast hosted by Bishop Greer Godsey of the Old Catholic Churches International. Expanding Your Faith brings together a panel of well-educated clergy and laity to discuss modern events with a biblical perspective. Our podcast is about to start. Please stay tuned. Edition of Expanding Your Faith. I'm Bishop Greer, and joining me today is Reverend Mark.
Greetings, everybody.
Reverend Dr. Marquita Bird.
Hello, how are you doing?
Woohoo!
And Bishop Ben.
Blessings to everybody.
Hey, Bishop. We have to yell because since Bishop's in Texas,
I know.
We have to
feel
yell.
Like you want to be really loud.
Yell across the space and time.
That's right.
So we have a treat for you today. We're going to be talking about spirituality, religion, and Star Trek. This has been an episode I've been looking forward to. I know Reverend Mark has, and Dr. Byrd.
Yes.
Because we're all huge Star Trek fans, and there's so much spirituality in Star Trek. It doesn't matter what version of Star Trek you're watching, you're just all kinds of spiritual themes in it, especially in DS9.
Mm-hmm.
Deep Space Nine kind of built its whole premise around an idea
yes.
of spirituality
yes.
and religion. And so so we thought we'd discuss that today. And as always, respectful comments and questions are welcome. So feel free to pipe up as we go along in the chat.
I have a question.
Yes.
If I'm out of order, just tell me to hush.
What?
I want to ask both of you, what was the first Star Trek you ever saw, episode or movie?
I would say episode 5 of the original.
Okay.
I would probably say it was one of the original episodes. I don't remember exactly which one, but it was one of the earlier ones. It might have been the episode with the black and white. The people who had black and white.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Let that be your last battlefield.
That's right.
Yeah, that's a good one.
That may have been my first one.
That's a good one.
I vividly remember.
So. Yep, that's a good one.
I don't remember what mine was about. I just knew I was in love that there was we finally saw black people in space. Before Star Trek, we had never seen any black people in space. Right. So I was like, we made it. And Lieutenant Uhura is a communications person, and I'm a communication person.
Yep,
so.
Yep.
Well, and she was a very strong and powerful
yes.
woman, too.
Yes, mm-hmm. yes. You know, just my kind of lady.
That's right. Absolutely. Yeah. So what is your favorite series?
Oh, my goodness.
I know.
Well, my first Star Trek was Star Trek III, shockingly. Because I was...
The movie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I hadn't seen any of the series.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so my dad, I distinctively remember my dad bringing Star Trek III to me to watch. He said, here, watch this. And I was a huge Star Wars fan because...
We forgive you.
Yeah, well, that's all I had ever seen at that point. And my cousin was a big Star Wars fan. And so Star Wars had been out about 7-8 years by the time I had watched mm-hmm, Star Trek mm-hmm. III. And I remember distinctly asking my dad, is Darth Vader in this? And I said,
blasphemy.
And he would say, no, just watch it. I said, is Luke Skywalker in this? No, just watch it. What about Chewie? Is Chewie in there? Because, you know, in
I
was probably 6-7 years old.
Oh, yeah.
And so in my brain, I was thinking...
You couldn't get away from that universe.
I was like, well, it's space, you know. Right. So they both are in space.
Mm-hmm.
And so I started watching Star Trek. I watched the original series because it was on rerun. And then when I was 7, Next Generation came out, and I grew up watching.
Okay,
right.
Okay.
I grew up watching that, Deep Space Nine. And I actually didn't get to watch Voyager until just a few years ago because I couldn't actually watch it because of where it was broadcast.
Okay.
But I would have to say my favorite series would be, it would be Next Generation. Just edging out the original series because I grew up watching Next Generation. My favorite all-time movie is Star Trek II, The Wrath of Khan.
Of course.
I could watch Wrath of Khan.
I know I've seen it at least three times.
Oh, I could watch it. I can't tell you how many times I've watched it. If I'm ever depressed or something, I'll be like, I just need to watch something. I'll zone out to that movie. I love it. Love that movie.
What about you, Dr. Bird?
What was your question again?
Favorite series.
Which series was your favorite?
No, my favorite series was Deep Space Nine. Mm-hmm. And it was for several reasons. One, because we never had a black captain or anything like that. And I read that they didn't write that for a black person.
Right.
They wrote that just for whoever. Mm-hmm. And a black person showed up and won that part. So they changed the decor of his quarters. Mm-hmm. I thought that was very, very, without saying anything.
Right.
You know, it was like, that's normal. And the fact that all of the main characters were aliens. Mm-hmm. The fact that religion was a core foundation of the series. Mm-hmm. And that so often the conflicts were shown in the church and made you really think about what's going on.
Right.
So it was...
They left a lot of open-ended questions at the end of the...
Oh, right.
That, whatever show that week.
Yeah, yeah.
So make you really think.
Make you really think about it. So I really loved that that show. And, of course, to see our man, the Constable.
Constable Odo.
Yes. Yeah. Fall in love with with Kira.
I loved the fact that you had so many strong women in positions.
Mm-hmm.
So they were very...
Yes.
They continued that theme even the more.
Yeah.
And Avery Brooks was a wonderful actor.
Absolutely.
Yeah, absolutely wonderful actor. Loved him.
Yeah.
Loved him.
And his character went through so much development on the series.
Yes,
he
really did.
He grew and expanded.
I loved him.
From where he started. So it was a wonderful series.
Yeah. Well, my favorite point was when he was with the prophets.
Yeah.
And he said, why do you keep bringing me here, the place where his wife died?
Yeah.
And they said, we don't. You bring us here.
Right.
You know, just to grow from that point.
Yeah.
This is where I'm keeping myself, and I need to be going someplace else.
Right.
And I love the fact that they showed him fathering a son and raising the child. Chief O'Brien was also raising a family, but it was nice to see
a father raising a son.
Yep, I loved it.
And he touched his son more than any other character that I've ever seen on TV.
Oh yeah,
he touched him all the time. He held him, you know.
Yep.
And
very
that was marvelous. Very marvelous.
Yeah.
Well, and we were so used to seeing single mothers on television.
This is true.
And for the first time, really, we got to see a single father.
Yeah, that was good.
You know, that was a big change up from what we were used to. I personally like Voyager.
Okay.
I think they did it a horrible injustice the way they ended it.
Yeah.
Oh, why?
It was rushed
to
me. Well,
it was rushed. You know, one minute we're in the Delta Quadrant, the next minute they're flying home.
Yeah,
you
know, after all of that angst.
It's just like, what happened in between here?
Yeah. I like series that wrap up characters and that you've fallen in love with. I like series that'll wrap up. But Voyager was wonderful.
It was a good series.
It was.
Yeah.
The feminine principle.
Yeah.
In action.
Yeah. Right. She was such a tough lady. I loved her.
I'm glad they went with Mulgrew instead.
Yes.
Yeah. The other lady.
The other lady. Yeah.
Yeah.
The other lady sucked.
Yeah, Mulgrew was an amazing actor, portrayed a lot of strength.
Oh,
she was excellent.
Oh, yeah.
Excellent.
So that was a really good one, a great one, showing strong characters for women and not in the kitchen, but leading, right. making decisions,
right.
that sort of thing. Kiss
yeah.
was strong. So,
very
yeah.
powerful.
Yeah, it's excellent. And I would agree. And Strange New Worlds is pretty good. I have thoroughly enjoyed that's a newer one. I didn't personally care for the other series. I felt like it was disjointed as far as story.
Discovery. Discovery was not good.
Yeah.
Ooh.
I didn't care for it only because I just didn't like how they developed the characters.
This is the one where the woman knocked out the captain and...
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I was through with him right then.
Yeah.
You know, and I couldn't see how they would let her be
a captain.
That was just ridiculous.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, and the whole series, speaking on spirituality for a moment, the whole series, it kind of was like Michael Burnham was a Jesus figure.
Yes.
She was always rushing in and saving the day. By herself, single-handedly, you know.
Yeah.
And
you didn't need anybody else. You just had her.
You didn't need anybody else. You just call in Michael Burnham, and she can fix it all. And
well,
it's kind of like, what are the other characters there?
Well, yes, yeah. yes.
Because Star Trek's always been about family,
right,
and friendship, and that tight community. The original series really taught me, especially with Kirk, Spock, McCoy, how you should be with your friends, how you should treat
right.
your friends,
right.
how you should interact with your friends. The what you're wearing on your shirt today is a hallmark of something that I think of, you know, as far as friendship and loyalty.
Right.
And that was probably my biggest beef with Discovery is the fact that they really didn't develop all of the, you know, that you didn't really feel like that you developed
the team
and the group, and you just had one person they were trying to overemphasize.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't like the fact that they were like, oh, for the first time, Star Trek has a female captain. I'm like,
no.
nope,
could
we didn't.
You,
they already did that.
Right, a couple of times, because they had one in the movie.
Right.
One of the movies.
Yeah, and even in the original series, You saw diversity amongst, you had African Americans who were brilliant scientists and
yes.
portrayed.
Yes.
You had Latinos who
mm-hmm.
were command level
mm-hmm.
and even outranked your favorite captain
of
the series. You had women who were in prominent roles that were doing things, making decisions. So, you know, even there in the 60s, Roddenberry was pushing that envelope. And so, you know, us diehard Trekkies were, you know, you hear comments like that, you're like, wait a minute, we've been pushing envelopes since...
from day one.
Since day one.
So.
Yeah,
that's right.
The original series had African-American admirals.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
And female admirals.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it really pushed the envelope big time.
Well, it was the first place that we saw Asian Americans who were not in the kitchen and not busboys, number
Correct.
One.
Right.
And it was the first place that we saw Russians and Americans in space working together.
In the middle of the Cold War.
Russians weren't hiding behind the corner spying on everybody. You know?
In the middle of the Cold War.
Yeah.
In the middle of the Cold War.
Yeah, so there was many first.
Loved it.
Yeah. And then having a black woman in the command staff.
Mm-hmm.
That's right.
That was a new thing. So they do credit them with having the first interracial kiss,
mm-hmm.
but that's not correct. There was one before on Gunsmoke,
oh.
where there was a man in town, and there was a woman who was working in a Chinese laundry, and
okay.
they fell in love, and he kissed her. That was before Kirk. But you know, Star Trek, they want to claim everything.
Right, right. We'll claim it.
We'll claim it.
Okay.
Bishop Ben, what is your favorite series?
I like Voyager.
Voyager's good.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
You just like 7 of 9, let's be honest.
Well.
Oh, no. Bellana Torres.
Yeah. Another very smart, strong female character.
Oh, yeah, Bellana was
something
new.
Yeah.
That was definitely something to watch her grow and expand from... you know, take no orders and do whatever you want to do to being a, a model Starfleet
contributing
officer. Yeah.
Officer, yep. Yeah. She was. That was an amazing transformation for her. So let's talk a little bit about the spirituality of Star Trek. The original series had a few episodes where spirituality kind of came to the forefront. But the biggest series for spirituality was DS9.
Mm-hmm.
And then probably following that, Voyager, because you had Chakotay constantly bringing in...
Yes, his Native American tradition.
Native American traditions and spirituality into the series, which I thought was amazing.
I forgot about that, yes.
Yeah, yeah. And so, and they did a pretty decent job, despite the fact that the guy they hired to advise turned out not to actually be Native American.
Correct.
Well, his roots were from Native American.
Yeah. Yeah.
So,
and they had several episodes where they would touch, like, other races,
right.
Mm-hmm.
Spirituality.
Right, right. And I think one of my favorite episodes of that series, as far as spirituality goes, is when Chakotay ends up on planet with people that have the same markings he has.
In the jungle.
That yes. came from Earth at some point and settled on the planet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So he was able to kind of go back to his roots some in that episode, and I thought that was an amazing episode. What are some of the moments of spirituality that stick out in your mind that you go back to when you think of Star Trek?
One of the most prominent is the Watchers, where they were watching the planet and the screen went down and they found out they were there, because that was it really made me think there was a hard line in terms of don't ever be fooled, don't ever take up something that's not really God, but something else, and worship that. Don't worship that. Right. And the fact that Picard was willing to be shot to allow himself to, for them to say, oh, he's not a super being, was very important. I like that one. And then, you know, there was others in the original series where Kirk showed up somewhere and they thought he was a god. And I, you know, I kind of laughed at that. Yes, he showed up and he was a white man who showed up. And that was kind of reminiscent of our history.
Yeah, that's right.
But,
the white savior complex coming into play, yes. Very much so.
Now, you wrote a book.
Right.
About what was the first thought of, hey, I should do this? What sparked it? What was the...
I was trying to get tenure.
Tenure... now you're a retired professor,
right? I'm a retired professor, but I love Star Trek so much that I thought, okay, I've got to do this grinding research.
Right.
But I love Star Trek. I might as well do it on that, which I will enjoy all of the reading. And I learned so much. I bought Star Trek encyclopedias.
Oh.
The title of the book is "Popular Culture and Multicultural Communication: Racial and Ethnic Images in Star Trek."
Oh, wow.
And it's turned out to be a trade book because a lot of other scholars who are doing research, I counted things. How many episodes was Uhura in? And how many was, you know, things like that. And that kind of data, my book is the only one that has that kind of material. And so I learned so much. I was going to publish the book without a chapter on Latinos. But I was in San Jose, California. I couldn't do that.
Right.
And so I got my encyclopedia and I went through every page and found every character, every actor, and I had a chapter of 25 pages talking about Hispanics in Star Trek. So that was
amazing.
Yeah. So I it was really, people got sick of me talking about it. but it was so much fun. And then my faculty was very you know, that's popular culture. And that's not what we do in the in the academic world. But every person who came there to interview in our department said, where's the lady who wrote the Star Trek book? So they finally got around to seeing it as something more than that. And at UC Davis, they have a whole department where they teach from Star Trek.
Really?
Yep.
Why didn't I know this?
Whole department, you know. And we find all the people who say that they became lawyers mm-hmm. because of Star Trek. Engineers, of course.
Oh, yeah.
Right. All sorts of things. So I was a communications major. So when I saw who, I was like, okay, I chose the right major.
Right. Didn't somebody do a research, like a, I don't know what you'd call it, but they tracked people in, you know,
different professions
that linked their inspiration back
oh, yeah.
to Star Trek.
Yeah.
And because you'd hear that on the regular, oh, I became mm-hmm. whatever for Star Trek, I became whatever. But then somebody really began to, you know, connect
document
the dots
that, yeah.
and document it, and it's actually a thing.
It is. It's a thing. I never saw that research, but I do know that there are a lot of people who are lawyers, a great number who are engineers.
Yeah.
And I was already a communication, you know, graduate when I saw it, but it just confirmed I
right.
chose the right major. You know,
right.
people
right.
who said they became doctors because of Bones. So,
yeah.
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 So yeah, that it really influenced, and so many people said that their parents made them watch it.
Mm-hmm.
When I was little, my parents made me watch it, and so we had to sit down and watch it. So.
Well, there's so much technology that we have today
Ooh.
That when you go back and watch the original series and Next Generation, you're like, oh, that's,
mm-hmm.
and then you make the connection of what we have and use today.
Well, yeah, a good example of that is this right here.
yes. Yes.
Somebody come up and hand Kirk or
mm-hmm.
Spock a tablet
mm-hmm.
with information on it, and well, here we are. We have
there
it.
We are.
And we have it.
The first floppy disk.
The first floppy
right.
disk.
Yep.
The
first
yep.
floppy disk, and seeing all of the pieces that went into the computer and
mm-hmm.
them changing
mm-hmm.
Things. So we saw everything in there.
Right.
Oh, diagnostic bed for the hospital.
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. I remember when I first saw my first zip drive,
mm-hmm.
I go, what, did they pull this right out of Star Trek?
Thank you. yeah.
Just set it in the machine. Yeah. So there was a lot of technological advances that came out of Gene Roddenberry's thought process.
Just, yeah.
And even though we don't have transport technology yet, we are still working on that.
Well, from what I understand, it would take more energy than we could put together to transport a rock from one place to the other.
Right.
So we don't have that kind of power yet, but it sure would be good.
Mm-hmm. There was a group of students at MIT that built a functioning transporter. The only problem was everything ended up on the other side as ashes.
Mm-hmm.
Well,
at least the energy was working.
Sure, that's what we wanted.
Well, there was a lot of stuff in technology where Roddenberry would say, you know, I want it at least based in theory.
That's the thing. It was in, yeah, scientific theory, what we could do.
I found an interesting paper for those that, this isn't necessarily on our topic, but an interesting paper for those that are interested. If you look up warp theory
mm-hmm,
at NASA,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
there's a scientist at NASA, it may still be there, I don't know if they've taken it down or not, but there's a scientist at NASA who has put together an entire paper on warp theory.
Oh, I'm sure.
How to make it
yes.
actually viable.
Yes.
And his prediction was that by the end of 2000, the century of 2000, that we could theoretically have warp power.
By the year when?
By the end of this
century.
Century. We could
okay.
have warp technology.
Wow.
So he says we have all of the technology we need to put together. We just need people
it's the
bold enough.
Yeah.
To,
and the energy source that we've got to find that can do it and do it.
He says, believe it or not, that a medium yield nuclear fission reactor would actually be able to power it.
Wow.
Well,
so, at least to go to warp one, you're not going to get past
right,
warp
one.
But, you know, at least warp one, we could use, you know, nuclear fission.
Well, I like watching. I read the first 64 Star Trek novels.
Oh, wow.
And I always liked how people theorized how we would get to, you know, to do this. And one is called De Sitter space. Mm-hmm. And they believed that you could fold space. And another one was taking hyperdrive to the extent that it's in its own bubble outside of real space.
And that's the theory that he goes with, is creating the warp bubble.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And because using the warp bubble, you also don't have any external forces.
You don't have the friction
inside
of
that bubble. So you would not have to have artificial gravity necessarily. You wouldn't have to have an inertial dampener, because everything inside that bubble is not affected by what's going on outside the bubble.
Wow.
So,
wow.
It's an amazing theory, but I don't think that I will live to see it implemented.
You never know. Science.
It's kind of scary.
Yeah, it's, you never know. Science takes leaps and bounds. You know, what they do now, especially medically, what they can do now. I mean, they're hauling you out of the hospital, mainly because insurance won't pay for much, right. But they're hauling you out of the hospital because they perfected their methods so well that you're healing, or, you know, there's less invasion to your body, which is amazing, you know. I know when I had my appendix pulled out, what used to, you know, they have to cut you open. Now it's just
it's very little, microscopic. Yeah,
I can't even really tell.
No.
Yeah, it's amazing.
Yes.
Indeed. Well,
I was thinking about some of the ideas that Gene Roddenberry had about religion, and that we were going to be secular humanist, and that religion was the one thing that tore humans apart. When he didn't realize that if it wasn't religion, it's going to be something else.
Right.
We're always going to have things going on. But I ran across a topic called neurotheology. Mm-hmm. And have you heard of that? Can't even speak it now. Neurotheology is the notion that people who have religious experiences, their brains are different than people who don't. Mm. And so we have people who are doing radiographic materials, studies on, for example, people who speak in tongues, as opposed to Chinese people who are studying in meditation, as opposed to the Catholics who are studying in meditation. And we find that there's a period in there's a place in the brain that's a little larger. And that it made me think about maybe some people can't have those experiences because of the difference in the brain.
Interesting.
Very.
So they develop that part of the brain. What happens? What's the difference between people that do and don't, other than it develops?
It's not that we develop it. It is that we are born with the difference in the brain. And I forget what part it is of the brain, but that we're born different. And that made me think about the notion that there are new souls, middle-aged souls, and old souls. And it says that the new souls are people who have never been here before, and that they only believe what they see and what they can experience. And the middle-aged souls are those who know some of the questions and some of the answers, but the old souls know some of the answers and they know more questions. So the it just made me think about how brain development can impact. I never thought about that before, that it can't, because there are so many people who say, I just can't see what you're experiencing. I just don't understand that. And it could be brain development.
That's interesting. So it would, because I think that's one reason we have so many different worship experience, just in the Christian community, you have so many different worship experiences, you know, coming out of, because I was raised Pentecostal, charismatic, you know, that's there's so many people that long for that experience.
Yes.
And it's an experience, all right, in a service versus maybe an Episcopalian or a Lutheran or somebody that leans more towards a reserve experience in worship. And I guess the development of our brain would have them gravitate towards one of those experiences.
Right. Or they hypothesize that it is growing up with the experiences allow you to develop some areas.
That's interesting.
Yeah, so.
One of the things that Roddenberry, I think, got right in that particular frame of mind is, if you look at the characters that typically had the greatest religious experiences in Star Trek, they tended to be people who were humanities-minded or art-minded or versus scientific types.
Oh, yes, more emotional, more visceral.
Right.
Yes.
Yeah. Whereas, you know, Sisko initially being very science-minded.
Yes.
Had a hard time accepting his role. Whereas, you know, Kira, who was much more of an emotional,
she grew up
grounded and connected person, didn't have any trouble at all accepting what was going on.
And she was very much a proponent for her people.
Right.
She was going to fight for her people. Not that, you know, the Sisko wasn't.
Right.
But she was another level.
Right. They were coming from very different points of perspective.
She was definitely another level.
She was the kind to take guns and take no prisoners.
Yeah. You know. She reminds me a lot of my sister.
So, I mean, and that was probably well before we really had any kind of document and proof of brain differences between religious experiences and people. Because a lot of those studies were done, you know, in the 80s and 90s.
What's that?
The neurological effects.
No, they're still doing that.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. They started in the 80s and 90s.
In the 80s, yes.
Yeah. And so, but Roddenberry already had this concept before you even had these studies beginning to be published.
Yeah.
He already had the concept of
the differences between those who are able to accept religion easily and those who aren't.
Well, he said those who are crazy. No, there's something wrong with these people that they can get hooked on that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
But I thought it was interesting that, and after he died in 91, is when the new writers came in and felt that they could investigate these things more, because he was flat out against it.
Right.
It was interesting. I don't know if you, I'm sure you remember the episode in the original series called Bread and Circus, where they go and visit this planet that is, it was basically a mirror of 1960s, but the Roman Empire had lasted. It never had gone away. And so it was a modern day Roman Empire. And it was very interesting because I had been told for years, and to some extent true, that Roddenberry was, you know, totally anti-God.
He was.
And so, but when you realize on the original, that particular series, there's an ending scene. And Lieutenant Uhura is communicating with Captain and Spock, and they were talking about, you know, there's this group that they are sun worshipers, and they immediately thought that they were literal sun worshipers, the worshiping of, you know, their sun in their universe or in their galaxy or solar system. I can't talk. at least I got smaller with it.
Right.
She goes to them, and they were talking about it, and Uhura interrupts them and said, y'all've got it all wrong.
Yes.
They're not talking about the sun in the sky. They're talking about the Son of God.
Right.
And so, and they start discussing a little bit amongst themselves.
And thank you for bringing that up.
So even though Roddenberry was such an anti-God person,
things would sneak in.
Kudos to him for allowing some of that to still show up and be there. And you saw Next Generation really tackle some of those things.
Absolutely.
You know, particularly in that episode that you were referencing, where Picard is giving that dissertation in the observation lounge, where he's like, "I'm not going to make people throw back to religion when they've moved beyond that."
Right.
And then you have Deep Space Nine, which Sisko gives a beautiful dissertation to his son about how, because Jake was his son, was saying that, well, that particular way of believing is stupid.
Mm-hmm.
And Sisko calms him down and says, "Who are we to say how someone believes
right.
is inaccurate?
Right.
The universe should teach us that there's so many unknowns among
exactly.
us."
Exactly.
And so I love how the series ebb and flows and allows you to think. And mm-hmm. that's what Star Trek really has always been about.
Yes.
Is both spiritually and culturally, not just scientifically.
And scientifically, all three of those, yeah.
But all of those things. Because I love how they'll tackle a scientific, you know, premise in one episode, and then the next episode, you know, culture, and then the next episode, mm-hmm. spirituality.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that's really how Star Trek has always been, at least to me.
There were a couple of good Next Generation episodes where, you know, spirituality to some degree is broached. Picard, you never really hear Picard talk about his own beliefs when it comes to spirituality necessarily.
Mm-mm. No, he doesn't.
He stays away from that topic very, very much so. But there's the episode where the Wanderer comes to pick up Wesley,
mm-hmm.
and they have the fight between the Native Americans
yes,
and the Romulans.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
and it boils down to, this is our path and our spiritual way of being. We're not leaving here. We came here to have our freedom to be ourselves.
Yes,
and ultimately, Starfleet has to kind of walk a fine line between the two, because of the treaty they worked out. And then you have the interjection of the Wanderer, who, you know, for all pretense and purposes, is almost an omniscient being in and of himself.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, you have all the episodes where Q shows up.
Oh, yeah.
You know, a godlike figure in Q, you know. And that creates all kinds of chaos. Almost pulling from Norse mythology for the character of Q.
Mm-hmm.
Q mirrors Loki very, very well.
Mm-hmm.
It's interesting how that character came about. The first episode of Next Gen, they were going to only do an hour, and the network said, "No, we want a 2-hour pilot."
Yeah, pilot.
And so Roddenberry had this character kind of in the back of his mind from the episode where the character Trelane shows
mm-hmm.
up in the original
mm-hmm.
series.
Mm-hmm.
So he quickly adds Q into the show to, you know, lengthen the episode to 2 hour. And it was supposed to be where Q was going to be a multiple episode per season recurring character. They whittled it down to just one show a season with him. He develops quite interestingly, you know, in his mindsets. But that was kind of interesting how he came about, and he came to be a very prominent character.
Yes,
and
I got so sick of him. do you know Mr. Flix from Superman?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, Mr. Flix was a guy who, when he appeared, you couldn't get rid of him unless you could say his name backwards.
Yeah.
And every time
Q
was on, uh-huh. I thought, that's him. That's Mr. Flix. We brought him all the way from Superman to here. He just got on my nerves.
But it's kind of hard to say his name backwards. I mean,
Q.
Yeah.
But I thought one of the other interesting things from his people were the episode where the Q was wanted to die.
Right.
And the fact that they showed their lives as like being in eternity with nothing happening. Mm-hmm. But that whole notion of who has the right to die and do you have the right to take your own life? Right. Should people force you to stay, to continue to live when you don't want to? Mm-hmm. Those are all questions that we deal with our medical journey.
Yeah, medical ethics came into a big portion of that that whole episode. And it was interesting to see, you know, when they take everybody to the continuum.
Oh.
And everybody's just sitting around,
yeah,
doing nothing, just
yeah,
like twiddling their thumbs. Mm-hmm. And you're like, would I really want to exist?
Exactly.
Like this?
Do you want to live like that?
Right.
So you kind of have sympathy for the poor Q that, you know, he's just bored stiff. You know?
Yeah, everybody there. Yeah. It makes me think about eternity in heaven. Is it going to be like that? I don't know.
I would hope not.
I hope not. I hope there's going to be something to do.
And there's another throwback to kind of religious history with the whole battle between Michael and the archangels and Lucifer and,
mm-hmm,
and the fallen.
Mm-hmm.
In the episode where the continuum is in civil war.
Yes, yes.
You know, and they're fighting each other. You have these, you know, two very powerful, omniscient entities, and they're fighting over control of the continuum.
Mm-hmm.
And so it makes me think back to Michael and the archangels and the fight with Lucifer and the fallen angels over who controls heaven.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. There's so many different aspects that make you really dive deep in our humanity and think, you know, because we're often taught in different religious circles that we aren't to question God, that we aren't
yes,
to ask, you know, why am I here, or why did this happen? And Star Trek really leaves you questioning a lot of stuff.
Right, right. Which what we're supposed to do if you have true faith.
Right.
Then you can question.
Yeah.
If you're so afraid that you can't question, then you have no faith.
Right.
So you can't have faith without doubt.
Yeah.
Without an out?
Without doubt. You cannot have faith without doubt. Just
doubt,
like you
yes,
can't have
yes,
light without
yes,
darkness.
Yes.
You can't have good without evil.
Yes.
It has to be that contrast in order for it to exist.
And I think inadvertently, the church, religion, whoever, has, by taking that stance, you know, you can't
mm-hmm,
question God.
Yeah.
You're saying that God is fragile and can't handle us going, I don't understand.
Right.
Right.
That doesn't make any sense to me.
Right. And I figure, God, how can we understand everything?
Mm-hmm.
It's God. You know, there's
right,
got to be stuff that we're not going to be able to get it, but that's all right, too.
Right.
If you have good faith, that's all
mm-hmm,
right.
Bishop Ben reminds me of this episode where Commander Data, and they're fighting with him over whether he's human or property.
Yes. Yes.
You know, that's a
good one.
That's a good
episode. I didn't think about that one.
You know, and they explore things like the whether or not an android can have a soul.
Right.
You know,
what does it mean to be a person?
What does it mean to be a human being? And at what point does this technological wonder of the android, not the phone, does this android actually become human?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it goes beyond what we currently have as logic, you know, and that is the Turing test and everything. If a computer can understand and articulate that it's sentient, then it's no longer a computer
mm-hmm,
program.
Yes,
sentient.
Yes.
It goes well beyond that because, you know, Data is very sentient, but there's still that question, without a soul, is he really human? You know, and they tackle that.
Well, I thought they were trying to determine if he was a person.
Yeah. If he's a
yeah,
person. Yeah.
That episode that you're referring to is called Measure of the Man. So they, Starfleet wants to take Data.
Yeah.
They want to basically study him and then put him on a mass assembly line and replicate him. And, you know, he doesn't want to do that. He's like, you know, you may damage me, you may hurt me, and you'll lose my individuality. And then there's this struggle on and on. When you were watching that episode, because they dive in not just with individual, but remember the scene between Picard and Guinan, and they start talking about race and subjugating individuals? You remember that scene?
I don't remember that scene.
Yeah, it was very interesting because I felt like they were not only dealing with the individual person, but then Picard and Guinan have this dialogue where she starts suggesting and making him think, Picard, well, if they start building all these androids and making a race of what turns out to be people, she's like, history tells us what happens when you enslave. And then he starts, the wheels really start turning, and he's going, absolutely not.
Right.
This cannot happen.
Right. He did. He argued fiercely for that. I use that episode when I teach my students in interpersonal communication about what a family is. Because Data had a child. And they wanted to take his child. And they were saying, Can he have a child? He's not a biological unit. We should be able to study her, and Starfleet owns them. Slavery again.
Yep.
But that I talked to them about what a family is, and that it's not necessarily, it's not biological by per se. It's by choice. It's biological and it's by law.
That's right.
And so that she was his baby, and he wasn't gonna let anything happen.
That's good. Yeah.
And that's a very deep spiritual thing as well, you know, the identity of a person, and, you know, the fact that Data was able to construct a child, no different than a human being
that's right.
constructing a child, you know.
And you have those scenes where she's, like,
growing,
deciding what she wants to look like, who she wants to be,
right.
even before, you know, people begin to teach the importance of knowing who you are, embracing your identity.
Well, and you know, for a while there, she kind of is questioning, you know, am I male, am I female?
Right.
Am
I that whole bit.
Non-binary. And we have a good example, Bishop Ben also reminded me here that we have non-binary characters all through.
Yeah.
Star Trek, especially Next Generation.
Yes.
Yeah. You know, where you have the non-binary workers who come to repair the ship.
Yes.
Fix everything. And then there is in the early episodes, you don't see them much after the first couple of seasons, there's a non-binary character who presents masculine looking but always wearing feminine uniforms in the episodes. They're usually in the background. Usually there somewhere.
It snuck that in on us. I don't remember that.
It's a male presenting, but he wears female uniforms.
Yeah, I remember what. Yeah. Yep.
So
it was a.
Now I'm going to have to go watch the whole series again.
I believe it was a Asian gentleman.
I think so, and he always wore a blue uniform, and it was the blue. Uniform.
That was really early in the series.
Yeah. Very early. Yeah, that's first season stuff.
That's first couple of seasons,
And
he's not there after that. Or they're not there after that, but they're there in the first few seasons.
Okay.
And that's a very spiritual thing, too. You know, defining who you are, your identity, your sexuality, your gender. And he didn't shy away from those social discussions, even when they were not popular.
Right.
And that was certainly not popular in the 90s.
No.
To have non-binary characters, to have
But they slipped it in. Most of us probably didn't even catch that.
But most people didn't even catch it. They snuck it right in, though.
Well, you had a whole episode where Commander Riker is dealing with this race of individuals.
Oh, yeah, that's what he was. You know, they came to repair the ship.
Is that the Bynars?
That was the Bynars in the first season.
Right.
This was like the third or fourth season. And the young lady, the young person who was struggling, whether she was feminine.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And she landed more on the feminine.
Feminine, yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Wasn't that the cogenitor?
No, that was...
Don't put him on the spot.
It was season three.
The cogenitor also was an episode that kind of... But I don't think it was... It was not... Riker, who
the Bynars were in the first series.
Yeah, the Cogenitors episode. I don't remember who fell in love with her, but one of them fell in love with the Cogenitor, and they're like, "Oh no, that was in Voyager."
Mm-hmm.
Cogenitor was in Voyager. Harry Kim fell in love with her, and she was kind of a non-binary. Person that was there to facilitate the birth of a child for a couple.
Mm.
So it was almost like a polycule, but the cogenitors were treated as a lower race, as not entitled to the same rights as everyone else.
Now I gotta go home and read that.
You know, it was a very interesting episode, and
okay.
And that got into that whole play on, again, what gives a person their individuality and what gives them the right to be, you know, fully a person in the eyes of society. And I think ultimately the cogenitor ended up dying. They ended up taking their life at the end of the episode because they had to go back to their home planet, and they had learned so much while on the starship that they just could not function.
Yes, I can't live that anymore.
Yeah, they end up taking their life.
Oh, okay.
Which is another big topic that Star Trek routinely discussed was, you know, suicide and end of life issues.
Mm-hmm.
And many times from a very wholesome spiritual point of view.
It was season five, sorry.
Okay. Called, Next Generation.
Yeah, called The Outcast.
The Outcast.
Yeah.
I'm going to look that up when I get home.
Outcast.
That's why I love this whole Star Trek universe, because you never finish learning.
No.
And there's so many little tidbits here and there. You know, here you are, guys, teaching me more stuff that I got to go look up.
Yeah, well, the premise of that particular episode was she began to realize that she identified as feminine. And then society wouldn't have it, because they were all non-binary, androgynous race. And they re-educated her at the end.
Oh, yes, yes. I was thinking about the same one.
Yeah,
oh,
yeah. Yeah, they re-educated her because she was not normal.
But she didn't, did she kill herself?
No.
No, she
ended up
letting herself stay in and re-educated because otherwise she wouldn't fit in.
They called her sick, is what they called her.
Yes.
Yeah. I remember that episode now.
Yeah. Yeah, it's it was one of those in your face but we're not in your face episodes.
Mm-hmm.
And I see Star Trek used to do that very well.
Mm-hmm.
When they would want to make commentary on social issues, like the first episode that you ever saw with the next with the original series, where you know the two races are battling because one's white on one side and one's black on the other. And then the other side is the reverse.
Yes.
And they just can't stand each other.
Yeah, and I just love it when Spock says, well, I don't see the difference. He's white on that side and he's black on that side. What's
the difference?
What are you doing here?
Right.
Yeah, yes. Well, we're killing each other.
Right. He said, well, he's white on the left side and I'm white on the right side.
Mm-hmm.
That's going, oh gosh.
I have that doll.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but it is amazing the amount of spirituality and religion that ends up seeping its way into
Star
Trek. And it's wonderful.
You,
We're running out of time here for this episode. I know, it's just flown by, hasn't it?
I knew it would.
So we're going to go ahead and end this episode. We're going to try to schedule another episode in our next season with Dr. Bird, and we'll come back and talk some more about Star Trek and spirituality. So thank you, Dr. Bird, for
thank you for inviting me. I really enjoyed it.
Absolutely.
Two co-hosts.
That's right.
And thank you to Reverend Mark and Bishop Ben for being with us today.
Thank you for hosting us, Bishop.
Yes, yes.
Thank you.
And so until next time, when we once again attempt to expand your faith, keep shining bright, my friends. Thank you for joining us for this episode of Expanding Your Faith. For more information on Expanding Your Faith, check us out on facebook.com/ Expanding Your Faith. We are available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Play, and wherever you find your podcasts. Until next week, when we once again attempt to expand your faith, keep shining bright.